Hallo und willkommen beim Bunte Vista. Dies ist eine Bonus-Episode. Mein Name ist Ben und ich bin hier im Internet, wo wir unseren Podcast aufnehmen. Bei mir ist ein entzitierter Perverser, der seinen Penis gerne kleinen alten Damen sagt. Es ist Andrew. Hallo, Andrew.
Hallo.
Hallo. Wie geht's?
Ja.
Gut, sehr gut.
Ist gut.
Ja, ist gut.
Mit das dabei ist gut. Ist auch Lucy, eine große Nerdin, die irgendwie gerne Sex mit einem Flugzeug haben möchte. Hallo, Lucy.
Hallo.
Hallo. Wie geht's?
Ja.
Gut.
Ist
sehr
gut.
Fantastisch. Sehr fantastisch.
Super.
That's the end of the intro, and that's also the end of all of my German.
I was thinking about what German words I know, and then none of them were appropriate for this podcast.
What have you got?
Just
bring them out.
Just a lot of Hitler stuff, you know?
Oh, fucking whoa. Jesus.
I really liked in Germany the way people would say, ja, super, super.
Ja, super. Das ist super.
Super is such a cool thing to say after everything. Mm. Super. I could not stop saying it for like weeks after we left Berlin.
That's how people react to hearing like a very good like Euro rave track. Super.
Ja, das ist super.
Everyone I met in Germany was from Australia, so didn't have such a fun experience.
We went to stay in Berlin, me and Eleanor, before we were married, and we went on a holiday over there, went to Paris, went to Berlin, and we did like the fun stuff before we went to London, to see my brother.
Pedophile Island, yeah.
But yeah, while we were in Berlin, we stayed with this friend of Eleanor's and his partner and their little dog. And they were very nice, took us around, you know, we had to round up some bicycles and ride around. And we went to the Holocaust Museum and
it's a fun afternoon.
We were checking that out and, you know, like, sorry, not the Holocaust Museum, the memorial with like the...
Oh, yeah.
The big plinths, the big...
Very moving.
Obelisks, that kind of thing. So we're looking at that, you know, going, And our friend Michael is like lying down on his back over on a bench near us. And Eleanor's like, oh, I'm sorry. You must be really bored. He's like, of course I am fucking bored. Yeah.
You can't say that.
Of course I am fucking bored.
This isn't
so many times
at all.
But yeah, you gotta love that German honesty because he had seen all of these very, very touristy things that he was showing us. And when I asked if he was bored, the reply was, of course I'm fucking bored. And he was.
When I was in, when I did my, like, the big, like, 3-month van trip through the States, I was, like, deep in the desert, while at the same time George was over in Europe, and she was in Berlin, living in an apartment, and, like, just going to, like, weird abandoned warehouse parties all the time. So I would have spent, like, 9 hours, like, hiking through a national park somewhere through the US, and then I'd get a call from her in the afternoon, and it would be 10 in the morning, and she will still be, like, on a bender. She'd be like, yep, I'm on acid, just saw Mogwai in a warehouse. It was fucking amazing. I'd be like, oh, I just looked at some, like, very nice big rocks.
I've been checking out some lichen.
I've been looking at different kinds of sand erosion. Pretty cool. So like, yeah, I just took like 30 milligrams of MDMA and I've just been walking around this warehouse. It sounds pretty great.
I guess your thing's pretty cool too.
The people, the fucking, the, every time she described anyone that she met in Berlin's lifestyle, I was just like, well, that's unsustainable. You can't do that all the time. Surely.
They do it. That's what they do there.
Holy fuck. It sounds exhausting.
And it turned out Ben was right. It was unsustainable. COVID.
That's
right.
The limit that they
left. You think you're going to party forever and then COVID comes and fucks you.
The party is over because of the novel coronavirus. It has ruined our raves.
Oh, boy. Hey, while we're in Europe, which we are.
Yep.
Which we absolutely are.
Mm-hmm.
Should we maybe...
Australia's only European podcast.
That's right. Should we maybe check in on the Netherlands?
The Niederlande? Yeah.
Niederlande corner.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no.
I thought you were going to play the theme there. Maybe.
Well, I'm trying, but my mouse is doing something fun.
Huh.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Mm.
And oh, my God. It's a tough call whether I'm going to leave this in or whether I'll edit this out.
You should take it out.
Ah, it's a bonus episode. Who cares?
Everybody, I'm from Holland. Isn't that beer?
Welcome to Netherlands Corner, where we check out the Dutch perverts and we hurl any fruit and vegetables that we have at them, shrieking, get out of our town.
These radishes say, first.
Yes. And then they're like, you came here to Europe? And we go, oh, fuck, our continuity. Fuck. This is from The Guardian. Dutch officials seize ham sandwiches from British drivers.
Pardon?
Has there ever been a greater crime committed? Lucy, you remember that whole Brexit thing?
I don't. What's that? What's it seems that all like about?
Seems like so long
that
ago.
That seems like
it?
That happened 5 years ago.
It seems like it's been happening for yeah. 5 years.
Forever. Eternally.
Yeah. So, you know, they've been slowly lumbering their way through like a no-deal Brexit and everything. Mm. And I guess stuff's finally starting to happen. All of the things that everybody said were going to happen that whole time. Dutch TV news has aired footage of customs officers confiscating ham sandwiches from drivers arriving by ferry from the UK under post-Brexit rules banning personal imports of meat and dairy products into the EU. The idea of two slices of deli ham constituting like a personal import. It's very good. Officials wearing high visibility jackets are shown explaining to startled car and lorry drivers at the Hook of Holland ferry terminal that since Brexit, you are no longer allowed to bring certain foods to Europe like meat, fruit, vegetables, fish, that kind of stuff.
Oh, mate, you nicked me ham sandwich out me lorry. Unbelievable.
Having a sandwich taken away from you is bad enough, but someone telling you that in a Dutch accent just seems like it really adding insult to injury.
Real
you
slap
cannot
in the face.
Have your sandwich anymore.
No, it is my sandwich.
We got an email from a listener recently who I believe was Dutch, who was telling us that the accent that we do for Dutch accents is just completely wrong. Like, not,
of course it is.
I don't believe that for a second.
It's a bad Dutch accent, but the implication we were given was that there is a correct country that it's the accent for.
Yeah, it's the one that the Swedish chef is from.
Yes. Probably Sweden?
Actually, it's America. It's an American actor playing the Swedish chef.
Jesus Christ. I'm going to try and find that email because the implication was we were getting at least one accent right. It was just for the wrong country.
Well, okay. That's fine. It's all Europe. It's one place. It's very small.
To a bemused driver with several sandwiches wrapped in tinfoil who asked if he could maybe surrender the meat and just keep the bread, one customs officer replied, "No, everything will be confiscated. Welcome to Brexit, sir. I'm sorry."
Honestly, it's a little
welcome
funny.
To Brexit.
Welcome to Brexit.
Welcome to Brexit, bitch.
Jesus.
Give me a fucking sandwich. Oh, that's just... Like, the really rough part about that is you're doing the ferry journey and everything. That's your lunch for later, you know?
That's right. You got your ferry ham sandwich, then you got one for in the lorry.
Yep.
Got one for when you nip down the Tesco's later.
For more ham and bread. The ban came into force on New Year's Day as the Brexit transition period came to an end, with the Department for Environment, Food and Rural Affairs, DEFRA, saying travellers should, quote, use, consume or dispose of prohibited items at or before the border.
You gotta eat it. Just gotta eat your sandwich.
Yeah, I'm imagining like, you know, in movies where like the DEA is busting in and people are like rushing to like either eat a bunch of drugs or flush them down the toilet. It's that, but seeing the agents coming and realizing you have to eat your two ham sandwiches as quickly as possible. Hey!
What's that you just ate? Was that a couple of ham sandwiches?
Are we talking just a ham sandwich? Like just ham?
Just ham.
I mean,
that's a really strange sandwich to me. It sounds like the ham's the problem.
It'd be fucked up if you had like a nice ham salad sandwich, maybe a cheese slice, bit of mustard, seedy mustard, you know, some slices of fresh tomato, a little bit of cracked pep, and then you were like,
"Oh, crazy!
Ooh, nice little bit of pickle," and then you're like, "What if I just give you the ham?" And they're like, "No, you don't understand. It's Brexit. Gotta take your whole Brexit. Shit. Gotta throw it onto a pile of burning sandwiches."
This is burning all these like British lunches.
I feel like sandwiches would burn really badly.
Sure, never tried to set bread on fire, but
yeah,
tonight is young.
Pretty much everything inside a sandwich is fairly moist if you're making a sandwich right, you know. From 1 January 2021, you will not be able to bring pow products of an animal origin, such as those containing meat or dairy, e.g. a ham and cheese sandwich,
into bloody the EU. Vegans are at it again, am I right?
The European Commission says the ban is necessary because meat and dairy products can contain pathogens causing animal diseases such as foot and mouth or swine fever.
That's true.
Continue to present a real threat to animal health throughout the union. Dutch Customs also posted a photograph of foodstuffs ranging from breakfast cereals to oranges that officials had confiscated in the ferry terminal, adding, "Since 1 January, you can't just bring food more from the UK." Hey guys, cut it out with the food. Take that.
So I looked up the email, we should probably read this in full at some point, but this is a very delightful email from a person whose name is, and I hope I'm pronouncing this correctly.
You're definitely not.
I'm not. Girk Heilkamer, who says, "The accent you give us is really funny, as to me you make us sound Scandinavian."
Yeah.
I suppose Dutch is like a weird mix of German and like Danish or something. Now, it would be mean to make fun of someone whose name is Girk, except at the bottom, the very bottom of the email, they say, "Kind regards. Yes, I have an insane Dutch name, but I should mention that it's not a normal name here or anything. It's also a weird fucking name from people from the Netherlands."
Okay.
"Thank you so much for permission to make fun of your name, Girk."
Girk.
Girk is a great name.
Heilkamer. So I'm looking at the IPA pronunciation for when Dutch people write IJ, as in Hollebolle Gis, it's pronounced between the IE in Thai and the AY in day. So between Thai and day. Tay.
Eh. Eh.
I don't know how you would pronounce that.
I'm doing it right now.
Oh, well, that's perfect. Yeah, it's that.
So while we are in this corner of Europe.
Yeah.
We need to talk about a story that was sent to us approximately 100,000 times.
So many times. And people were right to send this to us, certainly.
In fairness, it is our beat. You know?
Very much so.
Yeah.
Well, if nothing else, it really showed to us that it is decisively our beat.
It's I hate good that. Because I hate when people send us stuff and you're like, yep. Why are you sending me this? And then I'm like, no, fair enough.
And when like 10 people said it to us, I think we've had a hard enough time figuring out what our thing is. And then it's something like this where you're like, oh.
The listeners have got it under control.
The listeners know what our thing is.
Yep. You guys know what you like. And we will help out, you know. So allow me to read to you now from The Guardian. John Dillermand has an extraordinary penis. So extraordinary, in fact, that it can perform rescue operations, etch murals, hoist a flag, and even steal ice cream from children.
I would just say that they've structured this sentence that stealing ice cream from children is the most impressive part of it. I think etching a mural is more impressive than stealing ice cream from a child.
A wall can't get away from you, you know?
I could steal an ice cream from a child. Any mural I tried to make would look like absolute shit.
I don't know. Try stealing an ice cream with one of my kids. I'd try. They're slippery.
I've met your children, and I love them very dearly. I could overpower them.
Okay.
I'd steal one from Evie, but not Maeve.
Yeah. That's probably fair. Well, Evie would probably be like, okay, I'll share it with you.
Mm.
Well, that's very sweet.
Hmm. The Danish equivalent of the BBC, DR, has a new animated series aimed at 4 to 8 year olds about John Dillermand, the man with the world's longest penis, who overcomes hardships and challenges with his record-breaking genitals.
They're just on a whole other plane of, like, what's acceptable over there. I know really we talk about it all the time, but I'm still shocked every time.
Like, this... I don't know, I have those, like, distinct memories in the years before all the on-demand and streaming stuff of the, like, you know, watching SBS late on a late
erotic
on a weekend.
Tales.
Yeah, and being like, well, just being kind of reassured that even if you maybe weren't going to see a titty, whatever you were going to see was kind of fucked up.
You were going to see a flaccid penis at the very least.
Definitely on, like, an unattractive man.
Yeah. But overall...
And weirdly, it was hot somehow. Very strange. That might be my personal experience.
Not me personally, but, you know, some of us.
It was an awakening for some of us. I literally discovered that I was in demand from SBS. Like,
wow.
I can pinpoint the movie. I know the night that I watched it. I know the scene that I was watching. And I know that I was just like, oh, I'm gay. It's just like, oh, there it is.
Oh, there we go.
That movie is called Sommersturm, and it is German. And you can download that and watch that anytime you like.
I'd prefer not to be into men, so I'll be avoiding that one personally.
Yeah, that's probably smart. Yeah.
But yes, I guess my point is just that since time immemorial, we've been looking to Europe to see some weird shit. But they are on a whole other level because they're also doing it for their kids' shows.
Yeah, they just to the office of the TV station and they're like, picture this, kids' show, the guy's just got a huge dick. Like, and everyone
imagine
says,
this, he's a regular man, but his penis is quite long.
Just a normal guy. Unsurprisingly, the series has provoked debate about what good children's television should and should not contain.
I don't know if there's really anything to debate here.
Oh, you got a problem with the human body,
yeah,
Lucy,
look,
huh?
I'm very close-minded, I suppose.
You'd probably love it if it was a giant pussy snatching ice cream out of children's hands.
Jesus Christ.
Giant pussy with a very strong grip. Well, that would be fine.
Prehensile vagina? That is terrifying.
Yeah. Snap and shut around some kid's hand.
That's a fucking Day of the Triffids shit. That's terrifying.
Oh, women's genitals are terrifying to you. Got it.
Yes. Hmm. Yeah, very much so.
Oh, okay.
Penises, I understand. Very straightforward.
Well, some of them have a bit of a bend. Since premiering on Saturday, opponents have condemned the idea of a man who cannot control his penis.
They've condemned the idea of a man who cannot control his penis.
Every man should be able to control his penis.
He cannot or he will not, you know? Is he choosing?
Yeah, I don't know.
Like, you know.
It's like when people's kids run wild at the supermarket. Is it that they can't control them or they just refuse to?
Just don't want
to. Hit your kids. Smack your penis around, you know?
Don't know if that's the... Okay.
I guess performing rescue operations, hoisting flags and such, it's like, is the penis just doing this of its own accord?
Oh, that's a fair point. I don't think we addressed this in the article at all.
Okay, well, let's see where we go with this. Quote, is this really the message we want to send to children while we are in the middle of a huge hashtag MeToo wave? Wrote the Danish author Anne Lise Masterand Jorgensen.
So, you're doing the Dutch voice for the Danish.
It's just
as
European.
Well.
It's just European.
Okay.
It's my catch-all. Unless we go to France or Germany, I guess. Maybe Spain? Italy? Uh-huh. Don't get me started on Italy.
I will not get you started
those,
on Italy.
Those guys have all got some distinctly mockable accents going.
That's true. The Danish, not so much.
Well, you know, the whole kind of Scandi region.
Luckily, we're all Australian and cannot face criticism for the way that we speak on any level.
Because fucking we talk normal. Yeah.
We fucking talk normal.
Fucking nothing silly going on here, eh?
I fucking sound normal as shit, cunt, and I dare you to fucking try tell me otherwise.
Oh, I was just thinking the other day about, like, calling people a dog cunt.
It's like, the worst thing you can call a person.
Yeah, but, like, I feel like etymologically, right, if you were unfamiliar with that
this
phrase.
This is a smart podcast now, by the way. We talk about etymology.
Etymology.
Entomologically.
Entomologically speaking.
So, if you were completely unfamiliar with that phrase, right, and you heard somebody being called a dog cunt for the first time, you might think to yourself, oh my god, they have combined, like, calling somebody a cunt, which we in America think is the worst word that there is.
Mm-hmm. With a much worse phrase, which is calling someone a dog.
Yeah, yeah. So like, you're saying that this person is an animal's genitalia, but
it's kind of not. We're doing it all. No, we're saying is that you're a cunt and you're acting like a fucking dog.
Which is worse than a cunt.
Yeah, yeah. You're a cunt and you're committing a dog act.
Yes. Yeah.
We're not saying that you're a dog's vagina.
No, I'm that'd be ridiculous.
And you're a fucking dog.
Exactly right. Exactly right. To commit a dog act is lowly betrayal. It's probably quite akin to the way that, like, Donald Trump thinks of dogs.
Hates dogs so much. Dogs. Oh, no, you can't do it anymore. I was going to say a fun thing is to search his tweets for the phrase, like a dog. Yeah. But you can't anymore because his tweet's gone.
R.I.P.
But he would
censored.
Constantly say... People would be dumped like a dog, fired like a dog.
Kristen Stewart cheated on Robert Pattinson like a dog.
Yeah. He's so very invested in that relationship.
Very, very heavily invested.
So he hates dogs. He hates dogs and he thinks they're like the lowliest of creatures.
Because they're unclean, right? Because he's a germaphobe.
I guess so. But so yeah, like Donald Trump style, to commit a dog act, betrayal by a filthy person.
I believe we have discussed dogging the boys previously.
We have talked about dogging the boys. But I guess, just thinking about calling someone a dog cunt. you are a cunt who has dogged the boys, is what we're saying. We're not calling you a dog's vagina. That's why you can't make fun of the way we talk.
It's the modifier that takes... Calling someone cunt is like a friendly thing you do to a person.
It can be, can't it?
Whereas the moment you accuse someone of being a cunt who does dog acts, have just been like, you've gone from being like, fuck up, cunt, to being like, you're my friend and I love you and I respect you. You got me with a good burn, to being like, you dog cunt, is being like, I'm about to glass you.
Yes.
And then, you know, it's gotten really bad when you start calling the other person mate.
Mm. Yeah.
Mate. How did we get here from the man with the giant penis?
Just making fun of how people talk. That's all.
Right. Which we cannot be made fun of.
All those words we use are all the normal ones.
And stop telling us that the word no has several vowels in it. I don't know what you're talking about.
I just say no. No. And that's one vowel.
It's one sound. I don't know what you guys are talking about. No.
No.
Americans are very bad at doing Australian accents.
They sure are.
Except for that one guy.
The one guy that got viral for doing a good one. Fucking piece of shit. Fuck you.
What a dog cunt.
What a fucking dog cunt.
Christian Groves, an associate professor researcher.
Sure hope he does.
Who has the uncontrollable penis around here? Christian Groves. An associate professor and gender researcher at Roskilde University said he believed the program's celebration of the power of male genitalia could only set equality back.
That job title is like the sort of thing that American conservatives are scared of.
I think are real.
Oh.
The gender professor.
Now they're
going
to start paying people to be gender researchers.
Quote, it's perpetuating the standard idea of patriarchal society. Oh, I got Irish.
Yeah,
and normalizing locker room culture. It's been used to excuse a lot of bad behavior from men. It's meant to be funny, so it's seen as harmless, but it's not. And we're teaching this to our kids.
See, I wasn't even thinking about the Me Too aspect of this. I was like, why is there a show about a man's penis on any level?
I feel like that is probably the more relevant question than anything else around that.
Erla Heinesen hoisted.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody else want to have a go at that one? Erla Heinesen. What's the little strike through the O do, huh?
You can be the one cancelled in the future for all of
this. Hoisted.
It's that O means different things in different languages.
Oh, fuck.
I wouldn't want to weigh in.
A clinical psychologist who works with families and children said she believed the show's opponents may be overthinking things.
Mm-hmm.
John Dillermand talks to children and shares their way of thinking.
No.
And kids do find genitals funny,
she said.
Why is she like a South Park character?
When you get like a bad audiobook where it's like a male guy doing the voiceover, and he decides he has to do woman's voices.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
No, don't.
Do you listen to a lot of audiobooks where men are doing the ladies' voices?
There is one guy. I had an Audible subscription for a while, and it seems like they have a bunch of people that like aren't famous or good at it that they get to like sort of fill the gaps of their catalog. And there was one guy in particular who would do these very awful attempts at doing women's voices that were so grating they would ruin the book.
Well, I do declare.
Yeah, basically.
Maybe I could get a job doing those.
You have a rich, wonderful voice. I reckon maybe you could.
This show depicts a man who is impulsive and not always in control, who makes mistakes like kids do.
What is she, an Italian woman?
She's European.
But crucially, Dillermand always makes it right. He takes responsibility for his actions. When a woman in the show tells him he should keep his penis in his pants, for instance, he listens, which is nice. He is accountable.
I was just thinking that this was just going to be like, maybe you shouldn't have a kids show about a guy's dick, but there's just so much.
Everyone's just debating the fineries of it.
Like, he says what the women says.
And like, it does seem like the sort of thing children would find funny.
Yes.
Like, it's not sexualized.
That's true.
I guess.
Maybe it's fine. Maybe I'm a, you know, non-European prude over here.
Maybe.
Hoisted conceded the timing was poor and that a show about bodies might have considered depicting, quote,
difference and diversity
beyond an oversized diller, which is Danish slang for penis. Dillermand literally means penis man.
His name is Penis Man.
His name is John Penis Man.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Is that like calling someone a ladies man? You'd call him a Dillermand? Real pants man, a real penis
real
man.
Real penis man. Well, if it isn't Mr. Penis Man over here.
But this is categorically not a show about sex, she said. To pretend it is projects adult ideas onto it.
Fuck, they're right.
It's just about a man with an out-of-control penis.
DR, the Danish public broadcaster, the Danish public service broadcaster, has a reputation for pushing boundaries, especially for children.
I don't feel like you need to be pushing boundaries for children.
Okay. Another stalwart of children's scheduling is Uncle Ray, a popular figure who curses, smokes a pipe, and eschews baths.
Mm-hmm.
Is he just Popeye?
A character in Geppetto News made conservatives bristle in 2012 when he revealed a love of cross-dressing.
Oh, good for him.
And Ultra Smider Toyet, which translates to Ultra Strips Down, caused outrage in 2020 for presenting children aged 11 to 13 with a panel of nude adults. But, argues Hoisted, such criticism was unjustified.
Okay. I mean, read the next sentence before you pass judgment. Certainly.
No, I want to read the other one again. Ultra Strips Down caused outrage in 2020 for presenting children aged 11 to 13 with a panel of nude adults. But Hoisted says,
what kind of culture are we creating for our children if it's okay for them to see perfect bodies on Instagram, enhanced, digitally or cosmetically, but not real bodies, she said.
You're right. You're right, sweetie.
You got us.
I'm on board. Like, the dick guy's good now. Changed my own mind.
They got us. DR responded to the latest criticism by saying it could just as easily have made a program, quote, about a woman with no control over her vagina.
Yeah, it's called Sex in the City, am I right?
Oh, that's such a Samantha thing to say.
So this is the Google translation of the Danish Wikipedia page for Ultra Strips Down. The program consists of a number of adults posing naked in front of a primary school class that is allowed to ask questions to the adults' bodies and the body in general.
Like, what that thing do?
What that thing do?
Damn,
Each program has an overarching theme. The host is Yannick Schau, and the purpose of the program is to give children the image that the body can be very different and that there is no perfect body. The children ask questions about the development of the body, their appearance, and how they feel about their bodies.
All right.
That is strange, of being like a tiny child be like, you have a weird penis. Do you feel good about it? What is up with that thing on your stomach?
Imagine some children are mean. Imagine some kids are just so mean. Going to town on your dick.
Does that be like a Danish child being like, do you think you would enjoy if you had normal sized balls?
Yeah, I'm trying to imagine being up there with, like, you know, four other adults and there's 30 kids and the only questions are about, like, how small your dick is.
You just need, like, one child to be so like, small? What is up with your small titties? And then your, like, entire conception of self is destroyed.
Anybody else? Speaking of European TV shows, was it European?
What?
Maybe I'm wrong. That made you feel weirdly about the body. Did anybody ever see that TV show called Autopsy?
No.
That sounds familiar. Was it about autopsies?
No, wait, I'm wrong. I don't have the right name here, but like, so it was a TV show, it was on SBS sometimes, and it was just like a guy doing an actual autopsy.
This does sound familiar.
And like, So it would just be a guy that they had like plaster of Paris over the body's face so that you like didn't see the actual person, I guess. And then the dude would just like do an autopsy with a theater of people there and filming everything. But he would do it like, you know, getting in and looking at the skull and stuff where he'd be like, cutting the skin open on the head and like pulling it all down over the face and stuff, like very very
no thank you
very very full on. But it's also one of those things that you watch and you sort of go, huh, I never see any of this stuff happening to a body. I never see a body in this way or anything.
I wonder why.
Well,
because you're like living normally, like living a normal life.
Yeah, maybe. I wish I knew what it was now, you know?
If you know what it is, cool. Write pretty into cool, mailbag at buenavista.com.
I had a spooky guy in a hat. That was what I remember.
Uh-huh.
Important stuff that we've been covering here.
Anyway. Hey. Hey.
Mm.
Hello.
Hi, Andrew.
Hello.
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 Vic Oates.
Oh, so from the freaky deekies of Europe, we cross the oceans to what I assume in these stories are the freaky deekies of America. It's time for an installation of Paging Dr. Lucy.
If you find that you are having a little relationship trouble, just to pick up your telephone and dial it on the double. You call 1-800-317-5155. Now you're paging Dr. Lucy.
Can I? And I hate to interject. That was a very smooth transition.
Yeah.
The lead synth sound.
Hold on, you say that you hate to interject.
Yeah.
Yet it happens.
Yeah, a great pain to myself. The lead synth sound in that, so not the sort of the bass synth that you're using, the sort of trilling kind of bit, How did you do that? What is that?
I don't know.
Okay.
I would have to poke around in the file and figure it out. Some little synths, just some little synths.
It's almost got a sort of like roto cabinet kind of quality to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite specific. It's a very good sort of sound, and you nailed that theme. You did a very good job of it. I've been very curious about it. You smashed that out of the park.
Oh, thank you so much. And keen-eared listeners of the theme will notice that there is a phone number hidden in the lyrics. And you can call that phone number, leave a message, and we will answer it during this segment. If you perhaps have some kind of problems in your relationship that need resolution, perhaps you have a freakishly long penis that cannot be controlled.
Mm-hmm.
And you need advice about what to do with it.
In which case, you can just give me a direct call, am I right?
Oh, I don't know about that. Have we ever had anyone write in with a personal relationship problem that they've had instead of us getting them from the internet?
No, absolutely.
Oh. Well, that's
me and Lucy have done whole episodes of answering people's relationship issues in the past.
Are you talking about the Godfuckers episodes?
No.
All right. Because those are not relationship problems. Those are people's weird psychosexual issues.
Mine and Andrew's personal problems.
Does Goofy have a fuckable dog penis? Yeah. Things of that nature.
Well, there's still problems that need solving, you know?
Mm.
So, speaking of problems that need solving.
This isn't a problem that needed solving. This is just a question that I wanted answering.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Lucy sent this to us the other night and said, I can't stop reading these. Can't stop reading these posts.
Yes.
From the subreddit, r/Polly.
Which, surprisingly, we've never visited before.
Yeah, we got to get back into...
No, that's not true.
Oh.
I visited it after COVID broke out. And I don't know if we actually ended up diving into it. I feel like we maybe got into a few of them, but I definitely pulled out a few key things from people who were like, I have to choose who I love the most of my many partners.
And we definitely talked about how like poly and swinger communities were handling lockdowns and stuff like that.
Swinger community did not handle it well.
And before those like five people write in and get mad at us, we don't care what you do with your personal lives.
No, you can date as many people as you want. From my personal experience, it's exhausting and unpleasant to see more than one person at a time. But good luck to you if spreadsheet relationships are what makes you happy.
Doing all your little sexual Venn diagrams, you know?
Good Lord. It's just so much work.
So this one is from r/Polly. Practical Polly, sleeping arrangements for three people in one bed?
This is because I asked. Well, my friend was talking to me and she was like, I get the sleeping with other people part. I don't get the sleeping part. And I was like, you know what? Neither do I. What's going on? And so I went, of course, directly to Reddit because I was like, where else?
I get the sleeping with other people part, but I don't get the sleeping with other people part.
That's right. And I was like, where am I going to find this information? Reddit, clearly.
Hmm.
So I wanted to go see what everyone's doing in the poly Reddit. Where are they sleeping? What's the situation there?
So this post says, I am in a committed polyfidelitous triad.
I assume that means like a monogamous, but three of them.
Fidelitous is not...
Fidelitous is that a word? I thought you just made that one up.
Fidelious.
Fidelity?
I guess, no, Wiktionary is saying that it is fidelitous. Polyfidelitous? All right, I guess I'm wrong. Sure.
I'm in a committed polyfidelitous triad, and we're still working out life's little challenges when moving from a couple to a triad. One important factor in our life is that we love sleeping together, but it seems like there's always some challenge when three people share a bed nightly.
Mm-hmm.
This all started on a queen-sized mattress, which quickly got crowded when our dogs and cats joined us.
Jesus.
Well, there's your fucking problem.
How small are the three of you?
Like... Our 5-year-old still gets up at night and gets into bed with us occasionally. She's too fucking big. She's 5. Imagine having a third adult in your queen-sized bed. Jesus Christ.
I mean, I don't want to...
Here we go.
This is not a competition, but how much do you reckon your 5-year-old daughter weighs?
Probably less than your giant dog.
Yeah, okay, that's kind of my point there, is that you don't know the pain of having a 41-kilogram dog. That's... Jesus. He's a big boy.
That's a big lad.
Mm. He runs
maybe
hot.
You can kick your dog out of bed. You can't.
Oh, maybe you could.
Can't roll your daughter off the side.
I wouldn't.
Just be like, get. Go on, get.
Go on. Get out of here.
We upgraded to a king-sized, which helped greatly with the available space. This is a simple and obvious fix. The 16-inch difference doesn't sound like much, but it has made a huge impact in our nightly sleep and was worth the price. The next issue was blanket allocation. This is already too much for me.
You need more than one blanket, surely.
I don't know if I've... maybe I mentioned this on the podcast before, but like, when I moved to my
place...
But
you posted this, right?
I had to get a new mattress for myself, and I was like, looking at the place that George had bought our mattress from, and I was like, oh, I'll just get one of those for myself, because those were pretty comfy, and I was like, oh, it's like $10 more to get a king mattress. Like, why don't I do that? But I had not looked at what the sizes were. So, for whatever fucking reason, I had been like, a king mattress is like a queen, but it's longer. And I was like, that's fucking dope, because my feet are always, like, a little bit over the end of the bed. Like, I'm not crazy tall, but it just kind of works out that way. It would be so good to have a bed that's, like, big enough to accommodate me. That'll be fucking awesome. I got the mattress. King mattress is wider than a king bed. It's not longer. It is a king mattress is wider than it is long, which is useless to me because I am a single man who generally occupies like the third of a queen mattress, and now I'm just a guy that occupies like a fifth of a king mattress.
Mm.
And now it is just, if anything, made the whole situation sadder. There is more negative space than there has been before. This was a horrible mistake. And I wish I had looked this up even the cursory glance beforehand. Who the fuck needs that? What is the point?
These awful people, I suppose.
Yeah,
I guess so. The California king is longer, is what I have learned since.
On the odd occasions that my wife is away somewhere, I don't like... You know how... I don't know, you see depictions in television of people going like, ooh, I can sleep on the whole bed. I don't. I just stay on my side.
I don't do that. I sleep right on the edge of the bed, right on the corner.
Stay in my spot.
In my fucking formative years, when I was living on the boat, I was sleeping on a bunk that was like 60 centimeters wide, and that is now how I sleep as a person. I will take a tiny amount of space, and I won't move, and now I'm just like, what do I need this for? That was a dumb idea. Maybe I need to buy 5 cats.
Blanket allocation. The person in the middle would often get uncomfortably warm, so we moved towards using 2 blankets, one for each person on either side, and the middle could then use both or either or none as temperatures required. Finally, there's the issue of the middle.
Mm-hmm.
We've each found that being in the middle can be uncomfortably warm and restricted in movement, depending on what either person on the side is doing at the moment. One of the girls likes to spread out a little, but if both sides decide to do so in the middle of the night, the middle person gets stuck with very little room to move without disrupting those on the side. We haven't come to any sort of actual resolution to this problem, and would love any insights you might share. Jesse James 204 has the most Reddit reply, which is king size memory foam, and we all take turns being in the middle. I'm a bigger guy, 6'4", 270 pounds, so a lot of times I will be in the middle during sexy time / nap time / about to sleep.
Do not say sexy time, ever, for any reason.
I will be in the middle during sexy time with my hubbies.
I get to touch both taboobies.
Fucking damn it.
And then when I get hot, one of the girls takes the middle, and also 2 blankets is a must. I get hot really easy, and one of the girls is a blanket hog. Lol. We are in a committed polyfidelitous triangle.
Don't say it. Don't.
No,
finish it.
Or, since we are all video game nerds, we refer to it as a Triforce.
So mad. I try so hard to be accepting. And then it just really tests me.
Do you?
In her own time, yeah. She's meditating.
This all just sounds so difficult.
I will like what these freaks do. I will love it.
I will say that most of replies on the things I looked up said that they all sleep in separate beds. Like, they all have their own bed. seems more reasonable. That seemed like the most common triad scenario. The one bed thing, it all sounds difficult and none of them seem to really enjoy it.
I know like one functional triad. They're a bunch of gay dudes, which I think is the least surprising part of this. That's like the only arrangement where I can think of where it would actually work.
Mm-hmm.
And like they just all have their own beds.
Yeah.
And they're just like, I'm going to fuck this guy tonight, so I'm going to sleep in his bed. And then that's it. That's
so, so we'll do it in one of our beds.
Yeah.
That's what most of the replies I saw said. If you're polyamorous in a triad or otherwise, please write in. Tell me where you're sleeping.
Three people don't fit in a fucking bed. A bed is designed for two people at most.
The idea of being in the middle of a bed of three people is probably one of my worst nightmares. That sounds so awful.
It's
so warm.
At a very hot temperature. Like, even if I've got one other person in the bed, I am like, I love you. This is very nice. I am going to get as far away from you as I possibly can.
Same.
To allow my heat to radiate outwards.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sleeping on the edge of the bed. I'm edging the whole time.
I'm also always edging.
We're a big edging podcast.
Zombies in London replies, closed triad here. It's the door slamming. We struggled with this for a long time because D and I are both natural furnaces. D is kind of a flailer on top of that. T likes her space but wants to be close.
Well, that doesn't.
We pushed two queen mattresses together, tied their frames together with an obscene number of zip ties, and then laid on the goodies after that. We use a layered blanket system, sheets, I guess.
Yeah.
We use a layered blanket system of three blankets. Each one overlaps with its neighbor. Very comfy if you have the space. It means our bedroom is basically a giant bed, though. The chest of drawers had to be moved into the closet to make space for all the beds. Nothing but a pee thing, writes. I wonder if the pee is polyamory. Right, so we haven't yet conquered this problem in our little V. We have successfully slept together in hotel rooms on king-sized beds since we aren't out to our families and still have two sets of kids at home. Huh.
Two sets of kids between three people.
I guess?
This
raises all kinds of questions, though, because it's like, is one set of kids...
Oh, to two other people, and then...
And then the other one's to one person who is, like, divorced or something?
Maybe, I guess.
Maybe.
And finally, somebody says, honestly, whenever we can, we avoid it. This applies to two scenarios. One, my wife's boyfriend is in the military.
God damn.
He lives with us when not deployed. Wife takes turns in our bed / his bed for sleep.
I bet she does.
My girlfriend is also in the military, out of town / long distance. Although she is a petite thing, the heat issue is awful. When she's in town, she and I take the guest room so as not to broil my wife to death.
Broil is so evocative there. Just because, like, there is any sort of heating mechanism you could have used to describe that process. Toasting, you know, roasting, baking, broiling. It's just odd. I don't know what that
really
is.
Really doing it to you?
Because broiling is radiant heat, right? Broiling is under a grill.
Like in the Australian sense,
but like broiling is the...
It's grilling, right? It's the top part of the oven. I think that's what broiling is.
Yes. Yeah.
I thought it was just a funny way that they said boiling, but apparently
it
not.
It is a funny
just
word.
Just a ridiculous word.
Yeah. The thing that we would call shitty share house gas oven, it would be the grill part of it, which is not what the Americans would say.
They would say, I'm broiling this in the broiler.
That's the broiler.
And if I want to grill it, I will take it outside to the grill.
To put it on the barbecue, to grill it. Yes. Yeah.
Freaks. Fools.
Strange people, the Americans.
I'm sorry, but I completely agree with Americans about.
Well, that's because you've become, and I hate to say this word,
grill pilled.
Yeah.
It just makes more sense to me because in America, barbecue is a cuisine, and a grill is a utility. It's a tool. You know.
I agree with the term grill insofar as it refers to a sort of metal latticework. Yeah.
Whereas in Australia, we use the term barbecue to refer to both the object, the tool itself, and the practice of really fucking up some meat and then acting like you've done everyone a favor.
Yes, our barbecue tradition is dog shit.
Just destroy it. Just burn a sausage. Would you like some
burnt lamb chops? Congratulations. Your uncle fucking Darren has barbecued this for you.
There is like, you hear a lot of debate from people about, like, you know, the right level of doneness to order a steak and all that kind of thing. There is no worse steak on the planet you will get than one an Australian man has cooked on a barbecue.
And, like, proudly as well.
Yep. Hey, check out this.
Not a shade of pink in there, mate. There you go. Fucking dig in.
Check out this big
plate of... Get some potato salad.
This big plate of grey rocks that I am presenting to you. So, yeah, in that sense, I have to say, we have no barbecue game. It's terrible.
I think if I ever served my dad a steak that was done medium well, he'd punch me in the mouth.
As in, he wants that bad boy rare? He wants...
No, he would want it to be cooked more. He'd be like, oh, you've served me raw meat.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck you. He wouldn't say that. My dad would never say a swear word. Wouldn't even dream of it. But he's always overcooking his steaks. That's a classic dad thing to do.
You hang out with a chef who cooked in, like, country kitchens a lot. And so, you know, you would get a lot of orders for well-done steaks. Jeez. And coffees getting sent back if they weren't hot enough to, like, take your skin off if you spilled it on yourself, that kind of thing. And he said that what he would do when he got an order for a steak well done was grab a steak, wrap it in Glad wrap, toss it into the microwave for like 5 minutes, and then pull it out and toss it into the deep fryer for like a minute, and then bang it on a plate and send it out. And
yeah, the chef that at the restaurant that I worked at, he would chuck it in a frying pan, brown the outside, and then he would put it for like 10 minutes in the microwave, and then he would send it out.
Yeah, and people go, ooh, my compliments to the chef. Oh, boy.
Like, literally, the time that a well-done steak occupies on, like, a spot on the stove is too long for a functional kitchen. You just cannot do it. It is not practical. And also, it tastes like shit. The fuck is wrong with you?
It's bad. I used to think steak was disgusting when I was growing up. I thought it was so gross. And then I realized you're just not meant to cook it for that long.
Yeah.
It's interesting to see that generationally because, like, you know, talking to, like, my parents and my wife's parents and stuff, you hear all the things that, like, they fucking hated when they were kids. Like, how many people's parents, like, really hate, like, broccoli or Brussels sprouts or a bunch of things like that. And it was because their parents would, like, just steam them for, like, 25 minutes.
Right. And that's just all I ever ate growing up was, like, steamed vegetables with nothing on them.
Literally no flavor whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
Just brutally steamed vegetables and a piece of extremely overcooked meat.
That's the Australian dream right there.
Australian dream, baby. And then on the weekends, you can have a barbecue, get some of those like pink slime beef sausages.
Yeah.
They're pretty good though.
And burn some onions, you know?
Or you can do like a beef roast where it's like well done all the way through and it's just dry and horrible. And if you run out of gravy, you're just in for a horrible fucking time.
Yep. Imagine trying to put that on a sandwich the next day, you know? Terrible.
Like, the sandwich, I think, is the only, like, redeeming part of it. If you got enough butter on that sandwich, you'll be right.
You can make it happen. Plus, sometimes, like, microwaving leftover meat, just put a bit more moisture back into it for some reason. One more here from Reddit. This is another subreddit that we delve into occasionally. r/am I the arsehole? The answer is almost always
yes. Almost always yes.
No, sorry, that's not true, actually.
No, it's largely...
If you're a woman, you're not. Yeah. And if you're a man, you are.
Yes.
I wish it wasn't. I wish it wasn't.
Isn't
like,
that always the truth, fellas?
I wish it wasn't that clearly divided, but like the number of these that you read that is just a woman saying, "Hey,
my boyfriend's a piece of shit. Am I being unreasonable?"
So let's have an example here. My 29-year-old female, my husband Ted, 34-year-old male, and I have been together for 10 years. We met early in college and dated all throughout. I graduated before him and took a semester for traveling while he finished so we could move to another state. He ended up having to repeat some classes, big dummy. So when I got back, we couldn't move yet and I had no place of my own. So I moved in with him and his roommate slash brother, Ash, 32-year-old male, while Ted finished school. Before I moved in, I made sure that Ted cleared it with Ash that I was bringing my male cat with me. They had a dog who was old, but Ash said he was fine with it. About 3 weeks after moving in, I started noticing that our bedroom started to smell a lot like pee, and we couldn't figure out where it was coming from. My cat is toilet trained, so I knew it wasn't him. And the dog couldn't go into our room because it was on the second floor and he had hip problems. I started finding clothes on the floor smelling like pee. Now, in fairness, our cat is toilet trained.
Cats pee places.
She has taken to, I guess, to indicate that the kitty litter needs to be changed. She has taken to pissing on whatever else is in the laundry. So, if there's like a little pile of clothes, she's just like, well, this is nicer. Piss on this now. And I've been cursing her for it. So, you know, you can have a toilet trained cat that will piss in some other places. I asked Ted and he said he had no idea. After 3 months of frustration and this happening about 2 times a week, I asked Ash if he was bringing the dog upstairs and he said no. At this point, I'm fed up. I stopped leaving clothes anywhere, but I was still finding pee in my shoes, on my throw pillows, things like that. After breaking down one day, Ash suggested it was my cat marking his territory, as male cats are known for doing that. He said it made sense as it was only on my things and it was a new place. If any of y'all have cats, you know that cat's pee smells different than human pee. I trust my cat with my whole heart.
Sure, dude.
Your cat would eat your face if you died in the house. Like, we all love our cats, but come on. I trust my cat with my whole heart and my bank details. So I set up a camera in our room. I was paying rent. My boyfriend knew about it, so I figured this was the way to find out where the pee was coming from. Lo and behold, Ash was coming into our room and peeing on my stuff. When I saw the video, I packed my things and my cat and went to stay with a friend until Ted finished college and we moved. When all of this happened, I refused to confront him because ew, and Ted dealt with that. I haven't really spoken to Ash since. He was the best man at the wedding, but we tend to keep clear of each other at family gatherings and such. Hey, what's up, piss guy? With the pandemic, Ash lost his job and apartment and is honestly struggling financially. He asked if he could move in with us, and I honestly don't want to because he peed on my stuff. He was 25 years old when it happened. He was a grown-ass man. Now their whole family is calling and texting telling me I'm an ass for leaving him homeless in the middle of a pandemic, but it wasn't their stuff getting peed on. Am I the asshole? Am I holding a grudge because he peed on my stuff? But he is losing his home and his cat deserves a home, but it was made very clear that I cannot just take in his cat and leave him to the elements. I know I'm justified, but now Ted said that he couldn't do that to his brother and the job market is better here for his type of job. Am I the asshole for not wanting this guy to move back in with me after he pissed all over my things for over 3 months?
I very much hope and believe that this one didn't happen. But I don't know. You know, maybe she just doesn't sound like she's made clear to everyone that he pissed on everything. So, you know, maybe it's on her.
Did you emphasize the piss thing? Because maybe put that at the start. Like, yeah. Really highlight that.
Do they feel like that's really the main part of the issue here. And you can tell people about that because it's really weird.
I think, I also kind of think like, I don't know, if you just walked in one day and your brother-in-law was in your room pissing into a pile of your clothes. And you were like, what in the fuck is happening? And he went, oh, whoa, I'm sleep pissing. I'm so drunk right now. Or whatever. Maybe you could like, maybe you could sort of work through that or something. But having somebody like piss light you.
Yeah. For, no piss
lighting. She says 2 times a week for 3 months.
That's a lot of piss. And
somebody going out of their way to come into your room and piss in your clothing and on your pillows and in your belongings for a quarter of a year.
Maybe I'm very confrontational, but I feel like I would bring this up. I would perhaps try to have a chat about the situation.
Oh, you'd mention the piss thing?
I would probably mention the piss thing, but
it's going to come up, you know? Like, yep. How much piss is too much piss, you know?
I'd say any piss at all is too much for me, but I'm old-fashioned.
Well, la-di-da, your majesty. Not a drop shall touch my pillow.
Piss. No big penis man on children's TV. No piss on my stuff.
Oh, dear. Well, you know, we've all heard the story. The Lucy princess the and the pea.
Can we end the podcast now, please? There's the title.
Yep. Got it. Nailed it down. I think if this is true... don't you also have to kind of take the, like, I feel like she hasn't connected another dot here, which is, does your brother-in-law, after you move in, pissing on your stuff for 3 months, is this meant to be like some kind of tactic to make you go, either I have to get rid of my cat, or
yes,
I don't want to get rid of my cat, so I have to move out? Surely who that's knows? Surely that's the go. You know?
Either way, it's a no. You're doing fine, sweetie.
Yep. If you know, if you've ever pissed on anybody's stuff, write into mailbag@buntavista.com. If you would like to buy a shirt that you can piss on, go to shop.buntavista.com. Get yourself a little shirt. Buy multiple shirts. Pile them up in the corner.
Mm-hmm.
Mark your territory. And then give it a pretty good wash, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. All right.
I think that's it for us. Hey, if it was the guy from the TV show, he could have pissed on her stuff from downstairs, you know?
Sure. Mm-hmm. Huh. You are very correct there.
Snaking its way up the banister.
He's got a big dick.
It's very long. Look it up. It's too long.
Yeah, watch TV show and come to the conclusion that, hey, that's an infeasibly long penis.
Infeasibly?
Infeasibly, yes.
Infeasibly, yep.
Okay. Well, that's it for us here at Bunta Vista, the podcast that done talk good.
That's right. Fucking catch a lady, dog cunts.
fuck yous all. Fuck off. Go fuck yourselves. I don't need this fucking shit. Fuck you.
Crack off.